Shaking a Nickel Bush by Ralph Moody, University of Nebraska Press, Chapter 18, End of the Trail. When I'd written to Mother, I'd planned that we'd drive right on south to Roswell, then try our luck in the southeast corner of the state. But it didn't work out that way. It was the middle of the afternoon when we reached the little town of Moriarty, accent on the I, east of Albuquerque, on the main highway running east and west. I'd known Lonnie was out of makings before we'd left Santa Fe, but I thought it might be a good idea to let him suffer a bit for his sins, so I never mentioned it till we were pulling into Moriarty. Then I passed him a quarter and said, "Why don't you stop here and get yourself a sack of Bull Durham?" Lonnie was gone long enough to have bought all the Bull Durham in town, but I didn't mind. It was a nice warm afternoon, so I just slumped down in the seat for a little siesta. I didn't more than half wake up when he came hurrying back, took our sample from the back seat, and hurried away again. Ever since I'd made it, he had taken great delight in showing it to any audience he could scare up, telling them we were the cowboy artists of the Southwest, and that he was the one who made the finished product. I couldn't see any harm in his catching himself a little glory in Moriarty, but Lonnie wasn't out for glory that time. He was anxious to hurry us back into business so he could make good on the 25 I'd had to pay for to get his saddle and outfit out of hock. I don't know how long Lonnie was gone on the second trip, but when he came back around the corner, his face was all aglow. "Hey, buddy," he shouted at me, "I got a job for us, and I collected in advance." He came hurrying up to Shiftless, poked a limp $10 bill out to me, and babbled, "Keep it all, buddy. That makes a fiver on the hock ticket. I told you I'd get it paid off before you knowed it. You can start riding on the old buzzard. Here's a picture of him." I had to wait while he went home to get it. I was licked, and I knew it. But there was no sense in scolding Lonnie when he was so happy about having put over a big piece of business. But I did suggest that in the future he let me make the deals and that he stay and watch Shiftless while I went and had a talk with our new client. The talk was a lot easier than I'd expected. My new client was one of the nicest old gentlemen I ever ran into, and he knew exactly what had happened. He said he'd been over to Albuquerque two or three times while we were camped near there, that he'd seen several of my busts, knew what they cost, and had planned to come and see me about making one for him. Of course, I told him that since Lonnie had made the deal at $10, I'd do the job for that price. But I explained about it's taking 3 days to dry plaster and that I didn't usually plan to stop unless I could get half a dozen jobs in the same area. He understood perfectly, laid another $15 out on the desk beside my hand, and told me he'd scare me up some more clients. He did, six of them. And when I'd finished my work at Moriarty, he asked me if I'd do him the favor of going to Santa Rosa and making a bust for a friend of his there. He'd been so nice to me that I wouldn't have refused if he'd asked me to go to the North Pole to make one. But our going changed the whole shape of my plans. The banker at Santa Rosa had five jobs lined up for me there, one from 45 miles away. And when I finished there, he asked me if I'd do some for friends of his near Tucumcari. With it being early April, the nights were becoming warmer, so I didn't mind going farther north. But we needed a day to catch up with our housekeeping. Ever since we'd left Santa Fe, I'd been busy every minute I could keep awake, modeling faces in clay, making molds, or chipping out and finishing busts. With the exception of our suits, every rag of clothes we owned was dirty, and our dish towels looked as though someone had scrubbed floors with them. We'd done our Santa Rosa work at a little pocket in the hills beside the Pecos River, so I decided that we'd take a day off to do our washing there while we'd have plenty of water. While it dried, we'd just be lazy and lie in the sun. When I told Lonnie what I planned, he didn't think much of the idea. "We ain't no washerwomen, buddy," he told me. "We're artists, and artists shouldn't ought to do their own wash. It ain't fitting. And besides, our time's too dear. Ain't we making $10 a day? A tenner would buy the both of us brand new clothes right from the hideout, socks and all." "Go ahead and buy yourself new duds if you can afford it," I told him. "I can't, but we're going to take the day off anyway. Besides the washing, I've got a couple of letters to write and my tools and armatures to clean." Next morning, Lonnie spent an hour polishing Shiftless while I washed the breakfast dishes, scoured the pots and pans, and put a dish pan of water on to heat for my washing. When he'd finished the job, he took our suitcases from the back seat, came to the fire for a basin of warm water, and went down to the river edge without saying a word. After he'd shaved, he peeled off his dirty shirt and jeans, tossed them into the river, and put on his city suit. Then he came back to the fire and asked, "Say, buddy, how many jobs have we did since we left Santa Fe?" 12, I told him. "The hot ticket for redeeming your outfit was $25. You've drawn 10, and your share of the grub and gas has been 5, so there's $20 coming to you." As I stripped off 2 tens from off my pocket roll, Lonnie seemed a bit embarrassed. "Well, look, buddy," he told me, "I wasn't pressing you none. It's only that, well, what with buying new clothes and all." "Sure enough, I know how it is," I told him. "You found some dame in Santa Rosa who will let you ride her around in shiftless and buy her ice cream. Had a good time, but get back here early. We're going to be on the road by sunup." I don't know when Lonnie got back to camp, but he must have done his shopping before he picked up his girl, and it must have been late enough that he thought it best to get ready for an early takeoff before turning in. He was snoring like a fat sow when I woke up at dawn, and laid out beside him were a new blue shirt, socks, and a pair of Levi's. As always, he'd bought the Levi's 6 or 8 inches too long, but had folded the cuffs neatly and put a rock on them to make the creases sharp. I let him sleep till I had breakfast ready, then woke him just before sunup. We were a week at Tucumcari, and from there were sent on to Dalhart, nearly 100 miles to the northeast across the line in the corner of the Texas Panhandle. When I'd sent Mother the end of March money order from Santa Rosa, I'd stuck to my story about going into southeastern New Mexico to buy cattle, but I had to get another letter off before we left Tucumcari. I couldn't have doctor's cards going to Dr. Gagin showing me headed northeast while I was telling Mother I was going southeast. There was only one thing I could think of, and after I'd mailed the letter, it was too late to change my mind, my story, or my direction. I'd racked my brain to think of any reason why our bosses might be sending us to the northeast and could think of only one, so I'd written it. I said our bosses had decided to divide the great herd, cutting out the best steers and have my working partner Alonzo and me drive them to market at Kansas City. To make it sound more reasonable, I wrote that we'd be driving over the old Santa Fe Trail, hoping no one would tell her the old trail had been out of use for more than a quarter of a century. From there on, there was no way out. We stopped to make camp wherever I could get 4 or more jobs within a radius of 20 miles, and followed fairly close to the route of the old trail. There was never a time when I wasn't busy, and I never had to spend much time in hunting for work. I don't remember ever breaking camp when I didn't have at least one bus to make for some banker farther on. The only thing I had to watch out for was that we didn't get sidetracked. One of my clients was always wanting me to go north, south, or west to make a bust for a friend of his, but I'd make promises only for jobs that would keep us moving to the northeast. When I'd written Mother from Tucumcari, I'd made up my mind to work things out so we'd reach Kansas City at the end of June. Then, if I'd been able to save $1,000, I'd get out of the plaster bus business, go to Littleton for the 4th of July roundup, and find myself a little place where I could get started in the cattle business. By late July, we had worked our way to within 30 miles of Kansas City. I had only one more bus to finish, and I'd saved a little more than $1,000 I'd planned on. I had 11 $50 bills in each cuff of my Levi's, more than 150 in smaller bills in my pocket, my last job still to be paid for. I didn't worry a bit about the money when we were in camp because I was always wearing my Levi's or sleeping with them rolled up for a pillow. But ever since the barber in El Paso had mentioned pickpockets, I was nervous about taking a lot of money into a big city. It bothered me all the time I was working on that last bust, and the night I finished it, I sat up long after Lonnie had gone to sleep, writing a letter to my older sister, Grace. Ever since we lost our father, Grace and I had sort of worked as a team. She'd never believed some of the fairy tales that I could sometimes palm off on Mother, but she'd believe me if I told her the straight-out truth, no matter how fantastic it sounded. Besides, she knew I could recognize the kind of a bush Nichols grew on and had a knack for shaking them off. Then, too, she was more or less the treasurer of our family. Right after Father died, I'd made some pretty good money by riding at the racetrack in Littleton, something Mother would never have let me do if she'd known about it. But it was money that we needed, and I'd made it honestly, so Grace slipped it little by little into the grocery bill, and Mother never found out about it. That night, after Lonnie had gone to sleep, I wrote Grace a long letter and told her the exact truth about the plaster bus business and that I was sending her a money order for $500. I told her to work any of it that was needed into the family and that she could keep whatever wasn't needed till I came home or wrote for it. Of course, I couldn't mail the letter directly to Grace since everyone at home would want it read aloud if it came to the house, so I had to write a little note to Dr. Gagin. In the first paragraph, I just wrote that I was feeling fine, was going to Littleton, and that he'd get his next report card from there. Then I told him I was enclosing a letter which I would appreciate his giving to Grace privately because it was about a family matter with which I didn't want to worry my mother. Next, I wrote a letter to Mother telling her we would reach Kansas City in a couple of days. Then I was going right on to Colorado. I said we'd be getting an extra bonus when we delivered our cattle at the stockyards, so I'd have plenty of money for the trip and was enclosing a money order for $60. Then I filled in the rest of the letter by asking about all the others at home and telling her that I'd look up all our old friends as soon as I reached Colorado. The next morning, Lonnie drove me into town where I had to deliver my last bust. After I'd collected for it, I asked the banker if I could use his washroom. But all I used it for was taking five $50 bills out of each cuff of my Levi's. From there, I went to a doctor, got a report card, and went to the post office. I bought my money orders, mailed my letters, and went back to camp feeling happier and more proud of myself than I had ever felt in my life. On the morning of July 1st, we broke camp for the last time, threw out all my armatures and what was left of the clay and plaster and all our working clothes with the exception of the blue shirts and Levi's we were wearing. Then we lined our dishes, pots, and pans up along the roadside where someone would find them. Our days of being the roving cowboy artists of the Southwest were over, and I didn't want to reach Kansas City with a bunch of junk we couldn't take into a first-class hotel. We didn't stop on the Kansas side of the river, where the stockyards were, but drove right to the downtown section of Kansas City, Missouri. Then I asked a policeman to direct us to the best cattleman's hotel in town. He sent us to the Dixon on 12th Street just off Main, and I took a $4 front room on the third floor. It wasn't that I wanted to put up in style, but I did want to be sure we would be in a hotel where my Levi's would be safe in a closet. From the time Shiftless had been transferred to Lonnie's name, I'd lost a little control over him. I couldn't threaten to sell her if he didn't do as I said, and it would have been silly to tell him he couldn't take her away from camp evenings to give the girls a ride. I knew he must have spent considerable money during April, May, and June, but it was rolling in so fast that I was sure he couldn't have spent it all. I didn't realize he had until we checked into the hotel, had our city suits pressed, and were changing into them. Then he asked to borrow $20 so he could go see the town. I told him I wouldn't lend him a dime and lectured him like a Dutch uncle. For the past month, he had known we would reach Kansas City and go out of business at the end of June, so he'd have plenty of time to save himself a good fat roll. I'd planned to stay in town only one day, then take the train for Colorado, but Lonnie's planned to stay a couple of days longer, then drive Shiftless home to Wyoming. He should have had enough sense to know he couldn't do it without money enough to live on and buy gasoline and oil. When I found he was broke, I told him he had no more business owning an automobile than a five-year-old, and if he had a grain of sense in his head, he'd sell Shiftless, buy a railroad ticket home, and get out of town as fast as he could. Lonnie didn't say a word while I was bawling him out. Just stood and looked down at the carpet like a spanked puppy. He let me get all through, then peeked at me under his eyebrows and said, "Look, buddy, I ain't making no excuses. I ain't done nothing wrong with none of them dames. Just riding them around in Shiftless and buying them suppers and little trinkets and ice cream sodies, and stuff like that." "I didn't say you had," I told him. "Whatever you did is your own business, not mine. But from now on, you're going to have to paddle your own canoe, and you're not going to paddle Shiftless very far without gas and oil." Lonnie looked back at the carpet and thought about that for a couple of minutes. Then he peeked up again and asked, "Look, buddy, didn't you say you had gave me the saddle and outfit? You know that time when we was in?" "Sure I did," I told him. "It's yours, and you do whatever you like with it. But with jobs as scarce as they have been since the war, you'd have trouble finding one without an outfit. And even if you hawk it, you won't get more than 25 bucks this late in the season. The way you spend your money, that wouldn't last long enough to get you past the first skirt you saw after leaving the hawk shop." Lonnie didn't try to defend himself. He just stood looking down at the carpet. So to break it up, I said, "Oh, don't let it get you down, Lonnie. Tomorrow's another day, and maybe we'll figure something out." Get your glad rags on, and we'll go find some supper and see a movie. Lonnie always changed clothes faster than I because he let the ones he had, the ones he took off, drop wherever he happened to be. While I was putting on my tie, I could see his reflection in the mirror, standing sorrowfully by the door and waiting for me. "Oh, don't feel so sorry for yourself, Lonnie," I called to him. "The world hasn't come to an end. We're going to go first class tonight. No greasy spoon grub and dime movie. Go on down for a newspaper and we'll hunt up the best restaurant and show in town." Even that didn't do anything for Lonnie's gloom, and he slouched out of the room like a little boy sent for an armful of firewood. I didn't want the newspaper. We could find the best restaurants and show by just wandering around the streets for half an hour. What I wanted to do to get rid of Lonnie for a few minutes. I had nearly $120 in my pocket roll, and I knew better than to trust myself out with Lonnie while I was carrying that much. Somewhere along the line, I'd turn chicken-hearted and lend him half of it, and he'd blow it on a bunch of girls before daylight. If I took along only enough for supper and a show, I couldn't fall for his pleading. He'd get a good night's sleep, and if he wouldn't part with Shiftless, I'd give him money enough to buy gas and oil for driving her home. As soon as I heard the elevator door slam, so I knew Lonnie wouldn't pop back in any minute, I stripped everything but the singles from my pocket roll, turned down the one cuff of my Levi's, and laid the 10s and 20s in with the 50s. Then I folded the cuff again, rubbed it flat so it would look perfectly empty, and hung the Levi's in the closet. I just hung Lonnie's beside them when he came back with the paper, dropped it on the dresser, and slouched into an easy chair. I tried to cheer him up a bit and get him to help me pick out the best show and restaurant, but Lonnie was beyond cheering. All he'd say was that one joint was as good as another, and when we went out through the hotel lobby, anyone might have thought I was his mother making him go to school when he didn't want to. When I looked over the paper, I'd picked Wolferman's $2.50 dinner as the best meal in town and Pantages as the best show, mostly vaudeville, with a cowboy and Indian picture we hadn't seen. Lonnie trailed a half step behind me all the way to the restaurant, but he perked up a little as soon as they brought the food. Before the meal was over, he seemed to be his happy, carefree self again. Then he began telling me what a good buddy I'd been, and made the touch he'd been leading up to all the time. It was a cracking good one, because I knew Lonnie's honesty meant what he'd been saying, and if I'd had my whole roll in my pocket, I'd surely have divided it with him. For a minute or two, I was stumped as to what I might tell him. I couldn't say I was broke, he knew better than that, and I certainly wasn't going to tell him about the 700 I had stashed away in the cuffs of my Levi's. Besides that, I didn't want to lie to him. In all the months we'd been buddies, I never told him the whole truth, but I never told him an out-and-out lie either, and I wasn't going to do it when we were about to separate, maybe forever. What I did was what I'd always done. I told him just enough of the truth to mislead him. Why didn't you tell me you were broke before I wrote home? I asked him. You know I've been buying a money order and sending it to my mother at the end of every month. I could have cut down a little on that one I sent yesterday. Jeepers, buddy, Lonnie said sadly. I never thought of that. You always had dough when we needed it, and I reckon you'd always would have. He sat for a minute or two, staring at the tablecloth, then looked up, smiling happily, and said, Jeepers, I'm glad I didn't think of it. Buddy, I wouldn't take no money off in your ma. You know that. I know you wouldn't, Lonnie, I told him, but you can't go on being a little boy all the rest of your life. You've blown in enough money during the past 6 months to set yourself up with a little cattle outfit all of your own. You could still do it. The shape Shiftless is in, she'd bring enough here in Kansas City to pay your railroad fare home and leave you a couple of $100 in your pocket. The only sensible thing you can do is to sell her tomorrow morning and catch the next train for Wyoming. $200 would buy you a dozen heifer calves. And if you took good care of them, you'd have a nice little herd started in 3 or 4 years. Then you could get married, have a home of your own, instead of bumming around the country broke and barefooted. Lonnie sat with his head down till I'd finished. Then he looked up pleadingly and said, But jeepers, buddy, we ain't no more than got to town, and I couldn't leave old Shiftless go no ways. Use your head, Lonnie, I told him. The longer you try to hold on to her, the worse off you're going to be. Remember, your girl trouble didn't start until you had Shiftless to ride them around in. Even if you could leave the dames alone, you'd be licked. You can't drive Shiftless unless you've got enough money coming in to keep her in shape and buy gas and oil. And what good is she to you if you can't drive her? Without looking up, he said, Well, buddy, I could hock my saddle and outfit, couldn't I? Sure you could, I said. And how long do you think it would be before you were flat broke again? Not long enough to get you from here to Wyoming. And what do you think would happen if Shiftless broke down or you had a blowout on the way? You have to sell her for whatever anybody would offer, and it wouldn't be much. You think about it overnight, Lonnie, and you'll see that I'm right. But don't fret about it now. We've been in a lot tighter spots than this and come out alive. Let's go see that show. It ought to be a good one. I hoped I had convinced Lonnie to sell Shiftless, but I doubted it. So I decided what I'd do if he was still holding out to keep her when morning came. It wasn't much over 500 miles to Littleton, but that would put Lonnie more than halfway home, and with Shiftless running the way she was, we could make it in 2 days. If we started early next morning, we'd get there the night before the 4th. Most of my friends would be in town, along with Ted Hawkins from the Wickenburg movie lot, and we'd have a grand celebration. It seemed to me that would be exactly the right time to drop the word, sort of offhand, that I was looking for a nice little ranch I could buy at a right price, and that I'd like to be able to pick up some young heifer stock from an outfit that was running purebred Hereford bulls on its range. When we reached Littleton, I'd give Lonnie $50 to get home, but I wouldn't do it till I had him on the edge of town and headed toward Wyoming. We hadn't been out of the restaurant 2 minutes before I knew I'd wasted my time trying to talk sense to Lonnie. I'd almost forgotten he was with me, was still thinking about my old friends I'd soon be seeing at Littleton, when he suddenly chirped, chick-a-chick, as though he were a farmer boy calling the hens at feeding time. I snapped out of my wool gathering at Lonnie's first chirp and noticed a couple of fancy-looking girls about our age walking down the sidewalk 100 feet or so ahead of us. Just as I looked up, they glanced back, giggled, and walked on, but not very fast. That's all it took to make Lonnie forget his troubles. "Jeepers creepers, buddy," he crowed. "Wished I'd hung on to some of that dough we'd made off in our business. Them little chickadees are slowing down and waiting for us." "You forget about them little chickadees," I told him. "That kind wouldn't waste 5 seconds on you if they knew you were broke. Your days of being a Romeo are over for a while." All the way over to the theater, Lonnie seemed as happy as if he hadn't a care in the world. But when we got to our seats, he didn't pay any attention to the show. For as much as 10 or 15 minutes, he sat looking down at his fidgety fingers. Lonnie wasn't a fidgeter, so I knew he was doing some deep thinking, and I was pretty sure I knew what it was about. I wasn't a bit surprised when he leaned toward me and whispered, "I got to go to the camp, buddy." And I wasn't any more surprised when he whispered, "So long," before he sidled out to the aisle. I'd have bet half of it all that his saddle and outfit would be in a pawn shop within 20 minutes, and that before an hour was up, he'd have those two girls on some others out for a ride in Shiftless. Really, I was more pleased than not. He might as well enjoy his last fling. I'd redeem his outfit the next morning. Then, when I started him for home from Littleton, I'd take the cost of the pawn ticket out of the 50 I'd planned to give him. Well, one thing you can tell is that Lonnie is not a guy who knows how to do real work or live a consistent life. He's going to be a slave his whole life to his own wants and desires until God changes that guy to give him self-control. All right. I love you guys. We've had a beautiful day here in Alabama. I hope Oliver's leg is healing and that everybody in that home is feeling healthy. It was fun to see Elena riding a bicycle and Annie zipping along on her Strider. You guys have a great day. Goodbye.